Hi, you're listening to Record of Change. Record of Change tracks the changes of 8 individuals from around the world about how their lives have been shaped by the COVID-19 pandemic. My name is Ke Chengfang. I am an assistant professor of journalism at the Chinese University of Hong Kong. This is also from where I'm talking to you, even though I could be anywhere while I'm teaching online only. This is episode 2 of our second season. In the first season, we already heard how Wendy and her husband Dominic tried to immigrate from Hong Kong to Canada, but then the virus hit them. They were hospitalized for many weeks, and nations across the globe tightened their immigration laws. They're still in Hong Kong, where both the pandemic and the political situation have changed everything. Let's listen to them. Hello, Wendy and Dominic.
Hello, Ke Chen.
Glad to see you again. Yeah, welcome to our podcast again. So actually, your episode was the most popular one in our first season. So people are really interested in your stories and really appreciate that you shared your stories with us. It has been more than 2 months since we recorded our last conversation in early August.
Yes.
So we'd like to know the changes in your lives. So first of all, Dominic, how do you feel now? Are you still in treatment for your nose, for your smell?
Yeah. So I'm still going through some treatment and some research. So they gave us some kind of fragment. So I need to smell it every day. And also need to take some vitamins. So they want to see if this kind of treatment is effective. So, you know, I'm still under treatment.
Is there any estimation on how long it will take?
The treatment is around like 3 weeks, but I have to, smell the fragrance every day.
How long do you have to do the treatment in future, for until next month or until...
Well, no, it's only for 3 weeks. Actually, they did an MRI scan on my brain.
Oh.
So they did one before the treatment, and they'll do one after the treatment to see if there's any change.
So when will be that one, that MRI scan after treatment?
I think in 2 weeks after my treatment.
Okay. I hope you will be fully recovered by then.
I hope so too.
So how did your life change since we last talked? Your work, your life? Maybe Dominic can start.
It's pretty much the same. Like, you know, we passed the fact about me having the virus, so nothing much has changed in terms of the work and, you know, my life. But we're all preparing for the fourth wave in Hong Kong, because, you know, it's apparently it's going to come back. The virus is going to grow stronger in the winter, so we're all preparing for that. So let's see what happens.
So what about Winnie?
I think last time I told you that I found a job being a temporary social worker.
Yeah. So I guess both of you are working as social workers now.
Yes, and it's a temporary job. It lasts for 3 months, and I just finished it on this Friday, and I found a new one, yes, beginning at next Monday. Also a social worker job, serving people, ex-offender, serving people go out from the prison. The last 3 months is really a good experience for me. I'm working with people with mental illness. I did this kind of job after I graduated from my master program. And actually, this 3 months job reminded me of the good thing about the social worker profession, and made me, I think, reconnect with part of my identity as a social worker.
So what is a good thing?
After I was graduated, I was be a social worker, mainly do casework. Also, you can call it counseling. I really like this kind of job at that time, but I quit due to something bad happened, mainly because of the industry thing. It's not about the work nature. It's, I almost forget about the feeling of being a social worker. But these 3 months, I spend a lot of time doing casework. My mainly duty is talking with people with mental illness, talk about their difficulties, their strengths, and work together with them through the hardship. It's really a good experience. I can see their change. Meanwhile, I can also see my strength.
Okay, that's good to know. But talking about mental illness, I guess for those of us who do not have mental health issues, We have been experiencing a very difficult time due to many issues, including the COVID, yeah. right? I guess it'd be much more difficult for them, right? For those people with mental illness yeah. issues. So I wonder, how are your clients feeling? Are they feeling like even more stressed or experiencing more issues than like kind of normal days?
Actually, it was because most of our services stopped during the third wave. Before that, people can attend some maybe daily hospital or daily training or shuttle workshop. But during this time, due to the social gathering ban, they can't attend any kind of therapeutic group, any kind of training. It's really a hard time for them. And for those who had jobs, I saw many of them lost their jobs because they are grassroots labor. And for some moms, a single mother, they spend more time with their children at home because their children are not allowed to go to school, which causes more pressure for them, the parenting difficulties.
I think which means it's more difficult for you as social workers to help them, right? Do you have new strategies, new ways to help them?
I will meet them more frequently. Nowadays, we can only do casework. Like I said before, some massive programs, some groups are not allowed at this time. So I will meet them more frequently and increase the dose, I think. But for the jobs, it's pretty much the same, which means I will listen to them, understand them, and help them as much as I can.
Okay. So Dominic, do you want to share anything about the recent challenges in social works?
I think most of our clients, they're growing fatigue of the social distancing, staying at home, not being to grow anywhere. So it also put stress on their marital relationship because they're staying at home every day and they have to face each other. And also most of our programs, we have to use Zoom or online. So that in itself is a challenge for us because we're not very familiar with the technology ourselves. It's also a challenge for our clients because they have to adopt the new ways. So there's a change in how we deliver our service for sure.
So when your new contract, new temporary job lasts for another 3 months or longer?
It lasts almost 1 year.
So which means you will be staying in Hong Kong at least for another year?
Actually, we're not sure. I don't think we can go to Canada in a short term.
Winnie, you worked as an insurance agent before, so I guess you still maintain connection with the insurance industry
sure.
with your former colleagues. So how is the insurance industry now in Hong Kong?
I think the insurance industry is experiencing its greatest decline because recent years, the industry relying too much on the mainland market. My colleagues, including me, our main clientele target is in mainland China. But due to the border control, they are not allowed to come to Hong Kong. So actually, most of our colleagues have nothing to do. Some people I know, they also find a job or they also go back to school. I think it will not recover in a short time.
So for those clients from mainland China, they have to come to Hong Kong.
Hong Kong, yes.
Yeah,
so that you can complete the business.
I also kind of hear some stories like for insurance industry, they're developing some new insurance for like COVID-19. Is there some positive new things happening in insurance industry?
They have some plans for the COVID-19. Actually, we both benefit from this plan. We've stayed in the hospital for more than 1 month. So both of us can get like 800 per day.
Hong Kong dollars per day.
Yes, yes, for the subsidy. Yes, it is totally free.
Do you think the Hong Kong insurance industry is going to kind of change due to this incident? You said over-reliance on mainland China market is not a very healthy thing here, right?
Yes, but the local market is very small, you know. Maybe there are more agents in Hong Kong than the clients, than the customers. Currently, I know there are over like 20,000 insurance agents in Hong Kong, and the banks and the other institutions are selling insurance as well. They said they are facing the entire Asian market, but the mainland China is the biggest market. I know it's unhealthy, but we have no choice at this moment.
Yeah, it's difficult to change. So next, I want to actually talk with you about the overall environment in Hong Kong now. Dominic, you just mentioned there might be a fourth wave of pandemic coming in Hong Kong. Actually, we just experienced the third wave, which started in July, I guess early July. It's much better now. There are like a few positive cases every day, but still it's not totally going away and we are facing the fourth wave. So how well do the Hong Kong government deal with these recent waves of pandemic?
When I go for my follow-ups with the doctors, they explain to me because the virus is more active in the winter times and it's more common due to the flu season. So people experience flu symptoms, so they're more likely to get the virus. That's why they anticipate that there's a fourth wave. Unless the government, you know, if they continue to do a sloppy job with not closing the borders and not, you know, proactively, you know, putting measures, I think the same thing will happen like in the third wave. Like, you know, there'll be new cases every day and it'll grow exponentially. The government actually, like, they always respond until something happens. But, you know, I think they could actively do more this time. But from the trend, I don't think that's going to happen. Because they're always a step backwards. So let's see what happens. Mm, let's hope for the best.
Yes, sure. I think large-scale test is very essential here. Hong Kong just had a round of large-scale test in early September.
Yes.
That seems to contribute to the solution a little bit.
But they spend a lot of money and without asking us.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But also, I think Beijing gave some support for this.
I don't know if they give some financial support.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like Hong Kong citizens, we paid for the test.
Mm. Actually, a lot of things are happening in Hong Kong now, right? The newly passed national security law, and also due to the pandemic, at least the government is citing the pandemic as a reason why to postpone the legislative election to the next year. So for me, the overall, political environment feels very, very different from last year, right?
Yeah.
Because I came to Hong Kong last year, and last year this time, there was still large-scale protests in streets. Nowadays, it's very difficult to do so, both due to the pandemic and due to the national security law, right? So as someone who lived in Hong Kong for much longer time than me, how do you think of the current political and the social environment in Hong Kong now?
hopeless.
Yes,
we can't see any hope for the future. That's why we immigrate. Yes, and I think the government nowadays, they just use a pandemic to execute their national security law and some of their policies. Nowadays, they can do anything they want because people cannot go out, cannot get together to protest due to the social gathering ban. And if we get together to say something, the police will immediately arrest us. So it's really hard for people to do anything now.
But I think there are also some uncertainties, especially considering the US-China relations, right? So actually, I have a friend who is considering to buy a property in Hong Kong, buying an apartment. And he told me that he will make his decision after the US election because he thinks that if Trump wins, the US-China relation will still be very bad and Hong Kong's economy will not recover. And then he think the price for the property will still continue to decline so that he will not buy the property if Trump gets reelected. So I guess the US is playing some role here in deciding Hong Kong's future. How do you feel like the US-China relation and also the Hong Kong's economic situation here?
Definitely there is tension. It's very clear that the US is putting a lot of sanctions and pressure, you know, in Hong Kong. So there's going to be an impact on the economy and freedom. I think this is one of the long-term strategic planning of the US. So regardless Trump's or whoever wins the next president, this is kind of like a national strategic plan. So, you know, either way, they're going to impose sanctions on China because, you know, this is just how it's going to be. So it's not going to get better. It's just going to go downhill from now.
So if situation is hopeless, do you have friends around you that are also planning to leave, leaving Hong Kong now, like you?
Yeah.
Do you think Hong Kong is losing talents at a very fast rate?
Yeah. So increasing more friends asking me about immigrations, and most of them are some kind of professionals. So many of them are planning to leave, yeah. Or at least they want to get more information and get more ideas, especially those with kids. So I think simply they want to have like a different future for the kids. So I'm seeing more and more of my friends asking me about immigrations and, you know, asking me about the education or universities or the environment there.
Yeah, but for some of my friends who work in the financial industry, they actually think the national security law is a good thing for them. Yes, they think it made Hong Kong, the environment, more stable and more sustainable for them. So they will stay in Hong Kong. So it's diverse, I think.
Yeah, so it depends on which industry they are in and also maybe their own ideology, right? Back to your dreams about your plans before the pandemic, immigrating to Canada. So actually, what were you hoping for in Canada? What was your original plan after arriving in Canada? If there's no pandemic at all, what would be your plan there?
Basically, we just want like a brighter future for a kid and offspring. We just want them to be in a place without the need of being fearful, being threatened of what you say.
So you don't have kids now, right?
No. But we're thinking ahead.
But it seems that you plan to have kids in Canada there'd be better environment for them.
Yeah. So it's planning ahead, like, you know.
What about your personal development, personal career development?
Oh,
that's not the most important thing, maybe.
Well, you know, because I'm also in the process of converting my social work license in Canada, so I'm still pursuing that. There's opportunities there, like may not be as fruitful as in Hong Kong, but I'm still very confident that I'll be able to, you know, continue my practice or in some degree, because I see a lot of my other friends, they're able to do something similar. So I'm not too worried about that, actually, but definitely because, well, the wage and the taxes are higher there, so it may not be as prosperous as in Hong Kong, but, you know, still survivable, I guess.
So now you have postponed your move. Mm-hmm. Did it have consequence for you that you have postponed this move?
Because Dominic is a Canadian citizen, but I am not. So I may lose my permanent residency if I didn't fulfill the stay requirement, which means I need to stay at least 2 years in 5 years.
So this plan is still your plan? As long as it's safe to go to Canada, you still plan to do so?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So I guess you are monitoring the pandemic in Canada, right? How do you think Canada deals with a pandemic? Do you think you'll be better off in Canada or worse if you are, if you stayed in Canada?
Worse, I think.
Yeah.
Yes, because after we are diagnosed, we told some of our friends who met us in Canada, and they went to the hospital, but they are rejected to have any test because they don't have any symptoms at the moment. Even they told them they met some people who diagnosed, they are not arranged to have the test. Yes, and I also know some of them are not allowed to stay in the hospital because lack of the rooms or the labor. So thanks to the Hong Kong doctors and the nurses, they put a lot of effort and they work a long time to save us, to protect us.
So I only know that US did a very bad job. So I don't know much about Canada, but it seems that Canada is also kind of doing like loose regulations on this pandemic control. But in contrast, things happening in mainland China is very, very different, right? So Wendy, your family, your parents are still in mainland China, right? So I guess you have daily conversations yeah. with them, or maybe weekly conversations with them. How do they describe the things happening in mainland China now?
For them, the pandemic had gone for a long time. They don't need to put on any masks, and they went on journey during the Golden Week.
October 1st.
Yes. And
where did they go?
Sichuan province. Okay. Jiuzhaigou.
Quite a far away province.
Yeah, yes. And they sent me some photos and videos, and I saw a lot of people. and just a few of them wear masks, and no one now in mainland China worry about the pandemic.
I guess many of them are really proud of this, right?
Yeah.
Seems that the Chinese government did a very good job in controlling it.
Yeah.
So would your parents compare this to the US or to Hong Kong, the different situations now?
No, they just worry about me because they know there are some cases test positive every day. But they also told me that there is no case in China, which is just because they don't do the test. But I don't know if it is true because I haven't go back for a long time. I also don't know how China can do this. I really don't know.
Yeah, I believe they're still doing tests, but they will do a test very quickly, right?
Oh, okay.
For example, recently in Qingdao, there were some cases, dozens of cases, and they reacted very, very quickly, right? So not only in Qingdao, in the city, of course, a lot of tests going on, but also in other cities, basically all cities in China will announce to their citizens that if you have traveled to Qingdao recently, please tell us and we will do a test and do a test for people around you. So it seems that China, the Chinese government has very strong power to mobilize very, very quickly and to mobilize the resources and the people to control this effectively. So it seems that China has recovered a lot from this pandemic, but still, there's only domestically, right? It's still very difficult to travel to overseas. And also, the border control between mainland China and Hong Kong also has been extended to the end of this year. So which means it's much more, still very, very difficult for us who want to travel to mainland China.
Yes.
Do you have any like predictions of what will be happening in the next 2 or 3 months? Dominic just made a prediction, right? You said the fourth wave will come
that's
again.
That's what the doctor told me.
Okay. I hope he won't, but yeah.
I think we just have to be cautious, I guess. Because it's very difficult to really like predict anything because they don't know what happens because it's just too much uncertainty now. Like even the US president, you don't know. Like every week there's something new, something happens. So it's too hard to predict.
Yeah.
So, and you don't know what happened, you know, like today I saw the news that the States is going to set up an army force in Taiwan to defend, you know, so there's so much uncertainty now. So it's really hard to predict anything.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to be cautious, you know, just having baby steps, I guess.
Yeah, maybe it's for social workers. If clients tell you that this uncertainty really annoys them, really creates a lot of pressure, stress on them, what's your suggestion for them? How to deal with these kind of uncertainties? Do you have any suggestions based on your expertise in social work, in dealing with your clients?
Actually, a lot of my clients have this kind of questions. I will tell them that it is also an opportunity for us to do something we can't do before the pandemic, or it's an opportunity for us to think about our life. There is nothing we can do. We can't fight the virus. We can't do anything about the national security law. But what we can do is to think about our life because the hard time will end one day, but our life will continue. So for me, I told you that I found my passion in doing counseling. So I'm planning to continue my education. I may apply for another master's degree, like in psychology. The pandemic gives us some time and space to think about our lives.
Did you share your personal story of being infected with COVID and learn something from it?
Sure. I told them I think it's a really good opportunity. Even I lost a lot of money during this time because I can't do my business. But but I told them it's a precious experience for me because not everyone can experience this. And I think I found a new goal, a new direction of my life, which is very good. When I was an insurance agent, I was very busy and under great pressure. And every day I just push myself to meet people, to travel around in China, but I seldom have time to think, is it something I like? Or is it what I want to do in my entire life? So it's kind of a good opportunity for me to stop and think about it. And I think it is very meaningful in the long run.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I think our listeners will also appreciate your suggestions. Okay, thank you. Thank you for this interview. And yes, a lot of uncertainties. We will see what the work will be like in 2 to 3 months. So look forward to talking with you again in near future.
Okay, thank you, Ke Chen.
This was episode 2 of the second season with Ke Chengfang. Stay tuned for the following episode of Record of Change, when we'll hear from Mike, a well-established playwright and activist based in Cape Town, who has been more busy than before the lockdown and helps make cultural practitioners more resilient. Follow us on your favorite podcast provider and find out more about the stories behind on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, or our website, recordofchange.com. This podcast is implemented by and with members of the Bosch Alumni Network.